But the truth of what I had been told remained to nag at me, and before I finally slept I made up my mind to investigate further. For many weeks after that night I took my seat in that Bear Quaker Hall every Wednesday evening promptly at 7:30. At first I sat shyly in the rear, as on the first occasion, but as I began to feel more at home and to become on friendly terms with one or two members of the congregation, I ventured nearer and nearer to the front of the hall. Gradually I came to appreciate the simplicity and sincerity of the short service of worship, which on my first visit I had thought so anachronistic and unprofessional. I always tried to be sensible and objective about the clairvoyance which was given by the various mediums after the service. I heard a great number of mediums at work during this period of my investigation into spiritualism, and by no means did all of them impress me favorably. In fact, to only a very small number did I concede a genuine psychic gift, but at that stage I was not at all certain as to its nature. Was the medium really hearing or seeing the spirits of the dead, or was it mind reading? Too many of the mediums seemed to me to fish for information from the people they singled out, and then, having elaborated the information they got in this way, they handed it back as a message from the dead. At times I was sickened by the blatancy of this fishing and angered by the gullibility of the persons who accepted with enthusiasm evidence which I considered to be fraudulently obtained. Many times after hearing a medium of this kind I was tempted to give up the whole thing, but in those moments of disillusionment I would remember the mediumship of Mrs. Annie Johnson and soldier on. I remember one medium who greatly impressed me. I have long since forgotten her name, but I still have a mental picture of a dumpy little woman, with improbable red hair, wearing a poison green chiffon dress with floating panels. During the service she, as Mrs. Johnson had done, fell into trance, but by this time I knew what was happening, and I was not surprised when, still entranced, she walked to the edge of the platform and began to give an address. It did not even cause me to raise an eyebrow when the voice issuing from her lips turned out to be that of an educated and cultured man. I admit, however, to a certain astonishment when she gave clairvoyance in her waking state, for her own voice was undoubtedly that of a Cockney woman with a sheer gorblimey accent. On rare occasions I received messages myself, but I thought most of them could be explained easily enough by mind reading or prior knowledge. But on one or two occasions my young Arab turned up with the same message, that I was to become a medium and I was to serve and help suffering humanity, to convince them that death was not the end. For a long time I refused to accept it or even to think about it, because it seemed to be utterly impossible. By no stretch of the imagination could I see myself standing on a platform giving messages in public. These evenings at the spiritualist meetings were not without their lighter moments. I began to recognize several people who attended regularly and who invariably stood up to claim messages which no one else could accept or understand. "Yes, yes," they would exclaim eagerly, "I know Jack. Or Jim or William or whoever, he's my cousin in spirit." I used to think of them as the body snatchers, and they afforded me a certain amount of quiet amusement. Years later I learned that all spiritualist churches have their old faithfuls, people who grab at messages unclaimed by others. But by then I had learned to be more sympathetic towards them, since they are so often lonely or bereaved people longing to get some message of comfort, and by snatching at obscure messages they hope that the medium will eventually give them something they can truly accept and understand. One night after the officiating medium had described to me the young Arab, who was not really an Arab, and given me the same message, that I must develop my mediumship to serve my fellow man, which I was prepared to ignore as usual, I was approached after the meeting by a pleasant middle-aged woman who asked me what I was going to do about this message which she had heard given to me on more than one occasion. "Nothing," I mumbled, embarrassed, "I'm not psychic, so what can I do about it?" "Well, you can come to my home circle and find out if these messages have any truth in them," she said. "If what you have been given is true, then sitting in a circle will soon develop signs of mediumship if you have it. I wanted to know what took place in this circle before I committed myself, and the woman told me they sat around a very heavy Victorian dining table and they received messages by the sounds of knocks or raps. I agreed to join them, and after arranging an evening and a time, I went home. When I got home, I found a letter propped up on the kitchen mantelpiece, addressed to me in handwriting I did not know, and on the envelope was a German stamp. I knew no one in Germany and, baffled, tore open the envelope. I was even more baffled when I read the letter inside. The letter, in eccentric English, was from a woman in Munich who said she had been sitting regularly for some years in a home circle, and she had received a message through the medium of this circle from a spirit who called himself Rudolf Valentino. This spirit had given her my name and address in England and asked her to write and tell me he had tried to contact me through various mediums for a long time without much success. The message he wanted to give me was that I must develop my mediumship and be of service to my fellow man. I stood in our drab little kitchen for a long, long time, staring blankly into space. I read and reread the mysterious letter and remembered the messages I had ignored. I wondered if the young Arab who was not really an Arab could possibly be Valentino. I had seen and enjoyed two films of his in which he had played the part of an Arab, The Sheikh and The Son of the Sheikh. But did spirits really dress up in this way? Could it be an attempt to identify himself? If so, why should he think I would realize the mediums were describing him and not a real Arab? Even if it were Valentino, why should he want to contact me? I had never known him in life except as a shadow on the screen. True, I had admired him and I thought him very talented and enjoyed all his films, but no more than many millions of others. So why pick on me? But argue as I might, I could not get away from the fact that a woman in Germany, of whom I had never heard and who I was equally certain had never heard of me, had been given my correct name and address by a medium in Munich and had been asked to convey to me the same message I had so often received, and ignored, from mediums in England. It was very late when I went to bed that night, and the first light was in the sky before I slept. Next day I wrote and told the woman in Munich that I had received her letter. I asked her if she would ask this spirit who called himself Rudolf Valentino, if he could make himself known to me in England in some way which would be convincing to me. The night of the home circle came and I arrived at the house early, as my hostess had suggested, in order to get to know the other members of the circle before we started the proceedings. When we were all present, we were a group of six, three women and three men. The séance was to be held in a room in which was the large Victorian dining table my hostess had described. That night she told me the table could also be used as a billiard table, and her husband and son often used it for this purpose. We seated ourselves around the table and my hostess turned down the gas light, leaving just enough light for us to see each other clearly, and we all placed our hands palms down on the surface of the table. When we had been sitting like this for 10 minutes or so, a loud rap was heard, apparently from the center of the table. My hostess said this meant the spirits were ready to communicate with us. She went on to explain that they had worked out a means of communication with the spirits which, although it was slow and laborious, worked very well. One member of the circle would go slowly through the alphabet, and at the required letter there would be a rap. Another member of the circle was charged with writing down the letters and later reading out the message. First the spirits welcomed me as the newcomer to the circle. Then they conveyed a message saying that I had great psychic power. The next message informed us that I had brought a spirit with me who wanted to give me a message. They said that this spirit had been very psychically gifted in his lifetime. They said his name was Valentino. The next message, supposedly from Valentino, was exactly the same message as in the letter from Munich, but I was also asked to thank the German lady for delivering it. We were then asked if we would like to see how much greater the power was because of my presence. When we all said we would, the heavy table gave a great lurch, then reared itself up to stand on one end. When I considered the weight and size of this table, I could hardly believe the evidence of my eyes. After this happening, the messages continued and we were told we could in future dispense with the table and just sit quietly in a circle. They would experiment with the power, we were told, and particularly with me because I had remarkable physical mediumship. In fact, they hoped later on to be able to actually speak to us in direct voice. After the seance, coffee and cakes were provided and we discussed the evening's events while we all ate and drank companionably. All the members of the circle were delighted with the results and told me they had never had so startling a manifestation before. They asked me to continue sitting with them in their circle and I promised to do so, then took my leave and went home. I walked through the darkened town with much food for thought. To what had I committed myself by agreeing to continue with this circle? Did I really want to be a medium at all? All the way home I pondered the night's events and finally I came to the conclusion that it was true. The dead could communicate. 3. For a day or two after the seance at the home of the lady I now knew as Mrs. Cook, I was elated by my newfound conviction, but as the day of the next session approached my doubts about becoming a medium grew. Somehow I could not imagine myself standing on a platform in front of a huge congregation, describing spirits and relaying messages. I felt I was too young and no one would take me seriously, especially as I had noticed that church congregations, both Orthodox and spiritualist, seemed to consist largely of older people. It was the exception rather than the rule to see someone of my age among them. There was also the fact that I had always desperately wanted to do something of an artistic nature as my life's work, although I knew it would be hard to realize this ambition. I had no education to speak of, and I knew no one who might help me to get out of the rut that poverty and circumstance had created for me. Nonetheless, I had hopes of finding a better paid job one day and then I would be able to pay for lessons and study art. My decision wavered this way and that, and the day I was due at Mrs. Cook's house got nearer and nearer. I knew if I went on the appointed day I would be morally committed to attend every week for an indefinite period, weeks, months or even years for all I knew. After much deep thought I finally decided to be content with the conviction I had been given, that there was life after death and to forget those grandiose notions of serving humanity, in order to get on with my own life. I would not return to Mrs. Cook's house. I wrote a polite note to her telling her of my decision, but before I could post it another letter arrived from Munich. In it, my unknown German correspondent told me that Valentino had spoken again through the medium of her circle and had instructed her to write and plead with me to continue with my mediumship and to tell me he would help me, and that he and I together would help humanity to find the truth. Valentino also said that he wanted to repay a little of the affection ordinary men and women had shown him in his lifetime, and by helping my development as a medium he felt he would do so. This letter had arrived by the first post before I left for my day's work, and on the kitchen mantelpiece where I had left it the previous night, as my reminder to post it on my way to the cemetery, was my letter to Mrs. Cook. I looked at the German letter and I looked at the envelope on the mantelpiece. Should I do? In the end I put both letters in my pocket. I would think things over during the day and if I decided to ignore the letter from Munich I could post my note to Mrs. Cook on my way home from work that night. That day there was a funeral which I found even more harrowing than usual. The chief mourner, a middle-aged woman wearing the somber widow's weeds common in those days, was distraught with grief and while the elderly parson gabbled through the burial service, her friends had to restrain her from throwing herself into the open grave. When the service was over and the widow's friends were leading her away she caught hold of the parson's arm and I heard her say to him in a voice choked with tears, "How can I leave him all alone in that horrible hole in the ground? I can't go on without him, I can't." The clergyman spoke kindly to her. "It was God's will to take your husband before you, ask him for the grace to resign yourself to him and he will comfort you." The widow gave a kind of strangled scream. "If it's God's will to take him and leave me all alone, then I hate him, I hate him." "Please, Mrs. Wilson, control yourself," said the parson sharply. He turned to the friends holding the woman's arms, "Get her home as quickly as possible." The friends persuaded the widow in the direction of the waiting cars and the parson walked briskly off in the opposite direction. Impulsively I started towards the grief-stricken woman. I wanted to tell her that she had not lost her husband forever and that he was still near her, loving and caring for her as always, but I checked myself abruptly and stood still in the middle of the gravel path. What right had I to intrude on this woman's grief? She would see my mud-caked dungarees and think I was being impertinent and presumptuous, and how could I comfort her even if she listened to me? Only a medium could do that, a human bridge between the living and the dead. I stood for some moments with this thought hammering in my mind, then slowly I drew the envelope addressed to Mrs. Cook from my pocket. I looked at it, hesitating, then I tore it in two and then into four and dropped the pieces in a refuse bin. Now I had committed myself. I would try to develop as a medium if that was what was required of me. On the night of the circle, Mrs. Cook and her friends gave me a big welcome, and their warmth and kindness made up for the feeling that somehow I had given up my freedom. One of the men in Mrs. Cook's circle, who had been introduced the previous week as Mr. Herbert, was late, and when he finally arrived it seemed to me as if he had brought with him a great wave of sadness. No one else seemed to notice anything untoward, and Mrs. Cook suggested we form our chairs into a circle and should dispense with the table, in obedience to the instructions we had been given the last time we sat. The gas was turned down low and we began the séance by singing a hymn. Mrs. Cook then said a simple prayer asking for protection and offering the circle for God's purpose, and we sat in silence waiting for a sign. I wondered what would happen and regretted the loss of the table which had been used before for such an interesting manifestation. The clock on the chimney breast ticked loudly and the homely sound soothed and reassured me. We waited a long time, nothing happened and the heat of the room made me feel drowsy, but at the same time I had a feeling of great well-being. Finally I remembered nothing more because I fell fast asleep. When I awoke, the rest of the circle were still in their places just as they were when I fell asleep. I wondered what on earth they must think of me and I started to apologize, but Mrs. Cook cut me short by saying a prayer, which was clearly meant to close the proceedings, and so I shut up. The gaslight was turned up and Mrs. Cook went out to fetch refreshments. One of the women turned to me with a beaming smile. "It was a wonderful sitting," she said. Now I felt worse than ever. Not only had I been rude to these kind people, but I had missed the wonders as well. "I'm sorry," I mumbled awkwardly, the room was so warm I couldn't keep awake. Mr. Herbert smiled at me kindly. "You were not asleep, you were in trance," he said. "You are a natural-born medium." I stared at him in utter disbelief. "My wife talked to me," went on Mr. Herbert. I was glad he was pleased and I noticed he looked so much happier than when he arrived, but I still found it hard to believe. Mrs. Cook returned with a trolley laden with refreshments and she too was beaming approval at me. As we drank tea and ate our egg and cress sandwiches, which I thought were too dainty for my appetite, I heard more snippets of what had been going on while I was asleep or in trance or whatever I had been. The other woman's sweetheart, who had been killed in the war, had talked to her, and the other man had enjoyed a talk with his mother. All very well for them, I was thinking rather sourly. They've had a whale of an evening, but it's been a total blank for me. I hoped they would go back to the table next time and let me be part of the proceedings. Mrs. Cook offered me a plate of iced cakes. "I nearly forgot," she said casually, "why diuresis negation LM actor came through. Valentine or whatever he called himself, the one that died a couple of years ago."
"Valentino,"
I ventured. "That's the one," said Mrs. Cook. "He said to tell you to continue with your development. Of course he can't be a very advanced soul, and as you develop in our circle we shall hope to contact entities a lot more spiritually evolved than Hollywood actors." What a cheek, I thought. Who is she to say who is advanced and who isn't? How was I to know at this stage of our acquaintance that Mrs. Cook claimed to be guided by a very exalted spirit known as Xiuxiu, who had been a high priestess in the Temple of Isis during her life on Earth? For this reason Mrs. Cook was determined to keep her circle on the very highest level, both spiritually and intellectually. Unfortunately, no one had warned me about Xiuxiu, who eventually became the means of my fall from grace in the Cook circle.
That night I walked part of my way home with Mr. Herbert, hoping he would tell me more about what Valentino had said while I was blanked out, but I was out of luck. He talked without ceasing only about his wife who, it seemed, had died with tragic suddenness some months before. Their marriage had been ideal, he said, and without her his life had been bleak and lonely, until she had spoken to him through me at the séance that evening. Naturally I was glad I had been the means of giving back some meaning to his life, but I did wish he would spare the time to answer my timid questions about Valentino and his message for me. I wanted to know what his voice had sounded like. Was it an American voice or did he have an Italian accent, and above all was any evidence given that it really was Valentino? Since Mrs. Cook had not even said his name correctly, I could not be sure about this. But Mr. Herbert was too wrapped up in his own experience to bother to answer me explicitly. I gave up trying and we walked on in silence, until quite suddenly he shot a question at me. You were talking to the others for some time before I arrived, were you not? He asked. I told him I had arrived punctually and had chatted with the others until he came. I suppose they told you about my wife's tragic death? He said quite sharply. No, I replied, as a matter of fact no one even mentioned you or your wife. Well, I shall check up on that, he said, so I hope you are telling the truth. Somewhat huffily I told him I wasn't in the habit of telling lies. Mr. Herbert stopped walking and standing there in a pool of light from under a lamppost he turned me by the shoulders to face him. He looked very solemn. He said the communication from his wife meant far too much to him to accept it at face value. He wanted to be certain it was not just a product of my subconscious or even my conscious mind. If I developed as a medium, I must expect to be doubted at times, and only charlatans and fakes resented being investigated by intelligent people. I said I saw that, but what I saw even more clearly was that being a medium was going to be tough if everyone suspected you were a liar or a fake all the time. Mr. Herbert was not done with me. Another thing, Flint, he went on, it's a big thing for an ordinary working lad to sit in a circle like Mrs. Cook's. So live cleanly and be worthy of the chance. Well, we may not have a bathroom in our house, I thought to myself, but I bet I'm as clean as you are. Instead, I said I must get home in case my grandmother worried, and he let me go. I sat regularly in Mrs. Cook's circle for many months and the procedure hardly varied from the first time. Since Mrs. Cook wanted her circle to be highly spiritual, we always began with a hymn and prayers, then I would go off as they put it and various spirits would speak through me. At least the others told me afterwards that they did, but as far as I was concerned it was just an hour of my life I had lost. I saw nothing and heard nothing, and I had to rely on what snippets of information I could pick up from the others after I came out of trance. However, I did like the hymns and the prayers, and the sandwiches and cakes at the end of the séance were delicious. Also, the others kept telling me how well I was developing, so I was encouraged to persevere. One night, after I had been sitting in this circle for more than a year, Mrs. Cook herself fell into trance and the spirit called Xiu Xiu spoke to us. Xiu Xiu urged us not to encourage entities near to the earth plane as we had been doing, but to aspire to communicate with more advanced and progressed souls. From that night on my trances gradually became less and less until they stopped altogether, and Mrs. Cook and Xiu Xiu took over. I wondered if my development had stopped. I was puzzled and so were the other members of the circle, with the exception of Mrs. Cook, who was convinced her guide Xiu Xiu had arranged matters in this way, so that the circle would become more spiritual and not be content to merely communicate with their friends and relations on the other side through my mediumship. To do justice to Mrs. Cook, she was deeply concerned that I should develop my great potential in the most elevated conditions possible. To that end, as circle leader she ordained that we sing more hymns and say more prayers in future. I continued to sit in the circle regularly, but now I could hear all that went on, which, since Mrs. Cook had developed her trance mediumship, was usually Xiu Xiu giving an elevated discourse, full of words I did not understand, but which I thought must be very educated. One night when Mrs. Cook was in trance, Xiu said she would demonstrate through her medium one of the rituals she used to perform when she had been a high priestess in the Temple of Isis. We all said it would be a privilege to see this and begged her to do us this honor. Mrs. Cook was far from being a sylph. She was broad in the beam and her bosoms were of Earth Mother proportions. In trance, this substantial figure rose from her chair and moved to the center of the circle where she began to dance. She gyrated her hips and weaved her arms, all the while chanting what sounded gibberish to me, but was enthusiastically hailed by the others as ancient Egyptian. Her bounteous bosoms flopped alarmingly as the dance grew more energetic, first to one side then to the other, and her arms kept weaving like the tentacles of a busy octopus. I wanted to look away, because I was embarrassed for Mrs. Cook, but try as I might, my eyes were glued to the spectacle. I knew it would happen and I tried desperately to stop it, but I started to giggle. At first I subdued the sound, by sheer willpower, to a series of choked hiccups, but as the gyrating and the weaving and the flopping went on I completely lost control of myself and I laughed and laughed until the tears streamed down my face. The more shocked and angry the other members of the circle became, the more I laughed until at last Mrs. Cook came out of her trance and, with a look which withered me to ashes, she sat down in her chair again. Later, when Mrs. Cook saw me to the front door to bid me good night, it was no surprise to me when she said, quite kindly, under the circumstances, "I really think, dear, you are still too young and perhaps too excitable to continue your development at present. It would be best if you didn't come here again." She opened the door and I saw it was raining heavily outside. On a wage of 12 shillings and 6 pence a week, a raincoat was not a luxury I could afford, so I prepared to sally forth and be drenched. But kind, forgiving Mrs. Cook, I suppose to soften the blow she had dealt me, put her arms around me with the obvious intention of giving me a farewell kiss. I was touched by her generosity but, reluctant to be pressed so close to that bounteous bosom, I stepped aside and with all the gaucherie of my 17 years I trod heavily on her foot. "Ooh! Right on my corn, you clumsy oaf!" she cried in agony, and mumbling my apologies I went out into the night through the rain. Squelching home in my leaky shoes I thought over the night's humiliating events. I grew more and more depressed and ashamed of myself. I had been given a rare opportunity to develop my mediumship in a circle of educated, spiritual and posh people and I had ruined my chances and insulted the leader of the circle. Added to this, the exalted Xiu Xiu had said that I worked on a low vibration, so what use could I ever be to help and uplift humanity, as Valentino had promised I would do? Now the circle did not want me, no one wanted me, I had failed miserably and I would never be a medium of any value to the world. By the time I had reached home and was sitting in the kitchen drinking the cocoa my grandmother had made for me, I had made my decision. I would give up on the whole business of trying to be a medium, I would have no more to do with spiritualism and instead I would get on with my own life and try to make something worthwhile of it. 4. His pale eyes bored into mine and his bony finger waved in the air just an inch from my nose. "Do you think a steady job like this grows on the hedges? You are going to rue this day, my lad, I'm telling you." My guts lurched at the very thought of being out of work, but I had made up my mind to escape from the dead and I stuck to my guns. "I'll work out my notice, but I want to leave the cemetery," I finally got out through dry lips. "Don't you imagine you can crawl back here after you've worn out your shoe leather looking for work?" I dodged the finger. "Once you walk out of these gates I wash my hands of you." Mr. Hobbs stalked off, tut-tutting at the rashness and folly of the younger generation. I tried to cheer myself with the thought that I might find a job before my last payday at the cemetery, but those guts of mine lurched again at the mental picture of joining the long dole queue at the local labor exchange. I had burnt my boats and I had crossed my Rubicon, in 1 week's time I would be a member of that hopeless queue. During my last week at the cemetery my grandmother listened avidly to the talk about jobs in the local post office but she heard of nothing for me, and on Friday I was paid off for the last time with the terrifying prospect of being out of work for heaven only knew how long. I read the situation's vacant column in the local paper each time it came out, and one day I saw an advertisement that read, "Willing lad for duties as page boy, apply in person to the manager, Regent Cinema, St. Albans." I was willing enough, so I shot off like a bullet from a gun to apply for the job. It turned out that simply because the uniform worn by the previous page boy fitted me like a glove, I was lucky enough to be taken on, disappointing the many other willing lads who had applied.